Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast, a new podcast here at RFERL. My name is Brian Whitmore. I'm the Europe Desk Editor here and the author of the Power Vertical blog of the same name. In this podcast, just as on the Power Vertical blog, we will explore different aspects of Russian politics and society and look at the social forces and formations that shape Kremlin policy today. In our first edition of the Power Vertical podcast, we have in the studio David Satter, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, longtime Russia watcher, lecturer at Johns Hopkins University, and author of several books, including one of my favorites, Darkness at Dawn, The Rise of the Russian Criminal State, and the forthcoming book, It Was a Long Time Ago and It Never Happened Anyway, Russia and the Communist Past, which is due out in November. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk to you about a few things, a few developments in Russia that we've been covering on the blog over the past several months. One, of course, is something that's on everybody's mind is what's going on with the tandem. It seems every time that Medvedev says something that could be possibly construed as being anti-Putin, or Putin says something that could possibly be construed as anti-Medvedev, the Russian media kind of goes into a tizzy that the tandem is fighting, oh my, oh my. And then things seem to kind of stabilize and the tandem continues as it was before. What do you make of this? What do you see going on between President Medvedev and Prime Minister Putin at this time? Is this a lot of what the Russians call pakazuka? Or is something really going on between them? Is there a division between them, in your opinion?
I don't think that there's a division between them. In fact, I've never taken that seriously. And I base that opinion less on what's going on in Russia today than on my own knowledge of organizations. Medvedev is a creature of Putin. He owes his position to Putin. He was promoted by Putin. He's younger than Putin. He seems to be a very weak personality. Hard to see that there's anything about him that's independent. And even if there were, the many years of living in Putin's shadow and depending on him would have a tendency to convert him into a faithful lapdog, which is what I believe he is. Take a look at the Russian leadership and what Putin tends to expect from people. Isn't it Deripaska who said that he would gladly give up every penny he has if the state wanted it? Boris Gryzlov, who is the speaker of the Duma, said that if Putin asked him to jump out of a window, he would do it. Well, of course, these are always rather grotesque manifestations of the kind of servility that that exists in organizations, but they're not surprising, and they certainly don't give any basis for thinking that Medvedev says a single word that is not permitted to him by Putin. Of course, he takes slightly different positions on some issues than Putin, but that's normal, and from the point of view of Russian policy, it's even desirable because it tends to defuse opposition to Putin. It tends to convince people that, oh, there's someone in the leadership who sees the problems. But making these statements is one thing. Acting on them is something else. I mean, Medvedev has talked about the illegal nihilism in Russia. Before that, Putin talked about the dictatorship of the law, although in reality that's a contradiction in terms.
Well, the emphasis seems to be on dictatorship and less on law.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, dictatorship is itself lawlessness. But be that as it may, neither in the one case nor in the other were any serious actions taken to help Russia become a law-based society.
So you see this as a classic good cop, bad cop act that they're doing, or is something more sophisticated going on here?
Well, I don't think it's very sophisticated. I think it's a little bit of a good cop, bad cop act. I mean, it's I think it's a reflection of the fact that Putin doesn't try to that Medvedev isn't programmed 100% and that both he and Putin think it's advantageous for him to occasionally express a little bit of a different opinion than that expressed by Putin. But I think that Medvedev is a creature of Putin, that he that his statements, which seem to indicate a more democratic development in Russia, have no meaning, and they shouldn't be taken seriously.
There's something I have seen and have written about extensively on the blog is that while I tend to agree with you that Putin and Medvedev are on the same page, their teams definitely are not. The, for lack of a better term, the technocrats surrounding Medvedev. People like Igor Yurgens or Arkady Dvorkovich, and to an extent Alexei Kudrin, but he's a very special case because he's personally close to Putin, but ideologically closer to the technocratic elite. There seems to be a real conflict between these people and folks like Igor Sechin, the deputy prime minister and the head of the Siloviki faction. I mean, there seems to be a real serious conflict between those teams. Do you see that as well? And if so, what are the implications of that, given that the guys at the top appear to be on the same page?
Well, it reminds me about what someone once told me about the World Bank. It's just everyone on the third floor thinks you can solve all problems with irrigation. Everybody on the fourth floor feels you can solve all problems with fertilization. The fertilization people and the irrigation people don't speak to each other, and they actually hate each other. I think this is the nature of bureaucracies. The people who end up in Medvedev's apparat begin to develop their own bureaucratic interests, and in a situation in which they have very little scope to express themselves, those bureaucratic conflicts, which from the outside, of course, are really trivial and are seen to be really trivial, can become pretty bitter. But I wouldn't attribute much significance to that.
You do have people, though, saying that in order to reform the economy, you do have to make political reforms. You see this. Kudrin just said this very recently, and I was assuming he was speaking with Putin's blessing, but maybe not. I of course, don't know. But you're seeing noises like that coming out of the technocratic elite. You're certainly not seeing noises like that coming out of the Siloviki side. Nothing like that's coming out of Sechin's mouth, to be sure.
Well, they're too busy making money. I think that, you know, there's an old Russian proverb. It's not Russian. It's actually Eastern. You know, it says the dog barks, but the caravan continues. And I think that's it. So Sechin says we have to have but Kudrin says we have to have political reform in order for the economy to move forward. Great. He said it now.
Right. And everybody pays attention to the fact that he said it.
Yeah, he said it, but nothing follows from that. Words in Russia are often divorced from any kind of concrete action or any real meaning. So you have to be careful. What people say is one thing. What it means is something completely different oftentimes.
So the million-dollar question that everybody's asking that nobody, of course, can answer, what do you expect to happen in 2012? Do you expect Putin to retake the presidency? Do you expect Medvedev to keep it and the current arrangement to continue with Putin really in charge? Or do you think it even matters?
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters at all. But if I had to bet, I change my mind about it from time to time.
So do I.
If you ask me today, as we sit here and discuss it, my guess is that Putin will return to office. But I might think something different tomorrow.
Right. No, that's. I mean, I've come to a, I don't want to call it a conclusion, because in Russia you have to continually kind of recheck the narrative and be wary of getting locked into a stale narrative. But where I am right now is I'm expecting Medvedev to retain the presidency and for Putin to remain firmly in charge. And the reason
that's very, very possible, that would not surprise me in the least. And maybe tomorrow that's what I'll think, too.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I've written about this in the blog a bit is that I'm expecting, and this is just based on a lot of tea leaf reading, because gone are the days when we had Kremlin sources. Remember those days in the 90s, but those days are long gone. But based on a lot of tea leaf reading, what I seem to think is going on is that they're trying to do away with the perennial succession crises that haunt Russia every time there's going to be a presidential election. The elite collectively freaks out every 4 years. Now, they've changed the Constitution to make it 6 years, so the elite can now collectively freak out every 6 years. But what if the presidency was downgraded in real terms, and you had a national leader? It could be the General Secretary of the United Russia Party. It could be the Prime Minister. It doesn't matter. Wherever Putin happens to sit at this time, that's going to be who the national leader is, as long as he controls the Siloviki. and that presidential elections where you're merely basically electing a technocrat to take care of the day-to-day affairs, and the real big decisions are going to be made by the national leader. It's a lot like the Soviet system.
Well, that's what exists now. But the
but I could see it be more formalized in the near future. I'm wondering. I'm keeping my eye out to see if that's going to be more formalized in the near future, with maybe Putin taking a formal General Secretary of United Russia post.
Anything is possible, but it's hard for me to see why there's an advantage in that. My guess is that we've already got such a situation. Why advertise it? And Putin may feel that depending on the evolving situation, that it's in his interest to return to the presidency at some point. Because after all, the presidency in Russia is a very powerful office, and he may like the ceremonial trappings of it. We don't know. Maybe he's content with the situation as it is.
He seems to enjoy driving his Lada across Siberia and hunting
But yeah, but what's the point? What's the point?
Taking his shirt off.
What's the point of all this kind of public relations if he doesn't intend to run for president again?
It seems to be solidifying his position as the national leader, and he's kind of, it puts him really above the fray, especially if he's no longer the prime minister. I mean, again, this is all speculation, and nobody really knows. I'm not sure people in the Kremlin even know at this point. They're holding this pretty closely. The other thing I wanted to briefly discuss with you is this: modernization is the new buzzword in Russia. You can't pick up a newspaper or look at the internet without hearing something about modernization. Is it possible to modernize the Russian economy? And by this, the way this has been stated by Russian officials is diversifying it, decentralizing it, moving it away from its dependence on commodities and energy. Is this possible given the current political arrangements in Russia? They talk about the Chinese model. They talk about things like this. Can they modernize that economy?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that the present situation is becoming more and more intolerable for the talented and independent-minded people of Russia. It's certainly not as oppressive as the Soviet system was. But this life of limited freedom and limited self-expression and the domination of a kleptocratic elite in a society of really talented people, still very talented and creative people, it creates a lot of tension, and it's not conducive, I think, to the kind of innovation and initiative that you're going to need if Russia is to get away from a commodities-based economy. Nor do I think that the depredations of the ruling circles in Russia and their money hunger also does not bode well for them allowing the opportunities that are necessary, allowing the freedom, allowing the competition, allowing the security that civil society that members of civil society need if they're going to be behind that kind of dramatic change in the economic system.
Yeah, the way I always formulate this is that it's, if you're going to decentralize the economy, you de facto decentralize political power, because you tend to get independent centers of political influence in a decentralized economy, and the elite doesn't want to decentralize the political system.
No, on the contrary, I mean, everything works in the opposite direction. They don't want to be held accountable. We saw what happened to Sergei Magnitsky. They want to operate with impunity, to steal without ever being held to account, to eliminate competitors as they see fit, to concentrate wealth, to fix elections. Under those circumstances, and to control the political process. So where is the force going to come to bring about decentralization?
Perhaps from civil society, but before I get to that, there's kind of a little bit of an irony I've been noticing lately. It's well known that Prime Minister Putin is a big admirer of Yuri Andropov. He came up in the KGB when Andropov was KGB director. I mean, has made no secret of his admiration for the Andropov model. But if you look now, Putin has been in power for, if you count from when he first became prime minister in the autumn of 1999, he's been in power for about 12 years, right? This puts us about where Leonid Brezhnev was in the mid-70s. Now, early in the Brezhnev reign, I mean, I didn't believe this, but I actually went back and looked at kind of clippings from the old Soviet press about it. He was presented as this young, dynamic, energetic leader who went out and hunted bears and stuff. I even found a photo. Putin right now is about where Brezhnev was at the peak of his power. His rule kind of became doddering as the 70s wore in, as the early 70s became the late 70s, so to speak. The period of stagnation set in. If Putin sticks around, is he risked not turning into another Andropov, but turning into a Brezhnev?
Well, certainly. I mean, the system becomes more and more sclerotic. I think that's the point. We don't know what his health is going to be like, what his mental evolution is going to be like. But a system such as this one will become more and more fixed in its ways and incapable of change, especially such a change as real democratization and decentralization.
Now, another parallel I've been noticing lately, and this is a segue into the civil society aspect of this, is I am seeing something of an awakening in Russian society. I noticed this summer, I did a blog post called The August Revolution, which was in the wake of all the Himki protests. And it seemed to me that civil society was really waking up and coming of age. And you're starting to see this manifest itself in a lot of different ways. The Himki protest was certainly the most dramatic, but you had the blue bucket protests how the privileged elite would use blue police lights to be able to get through traffic. And there was a tragic incident in which two women were killed when a Lukoil executive was using this privilege and went down the wrong way on the highway and caused an auto accident. You're seeing it in musicians like the young rapper Noize MC coming out and his rapping against police brutality. I don't know if you follow this, or he was arrested for insulting the police during a concert for police brutality. And the minute he got out of jail, he wrote a new song about insulting the police for police brutality. And your older rockers like Yuri Shevchuk coming out very openly against the regime and holding concerts and making political statements. You see it in the spate of whistleblowers, police and prosecutors and others who are kind of exposing the flaws in the system. Do you see a great Russian awakening right now in society, and what does that bode for the future, given what we've talked about, what's going on the top?
I don't see a great awakening, but it is interesting that Russians are getting fed up and in certain situations are ready to manifest their unhappiness. Certainly the blue light protests struck a raw nerve. I mean, rather the abuses of high-ranking motorists and their chauffeurs who run down innocent people or who cause traffic accidents. That's something that affects everybody at a basic level. There are occasional cases that do touch people and do motivate them, but it takes a lot to do that. And Russian society is still pretty passive. There are signs that it might not be passive forever, and these little ripples on the surface suggest that. But I wouldn't say that we've got a great Russian awakening on our hands. The fact is that Russians are products of their history. For so long they waited for change, and when change came, it was a disappointment. And all that they got was a new dictatorship, not of party bureaucrats, but of basically of thieves. And I think that many people just take the view that nothing they do will make any difference, and as long as life isn't too intolerable, they'll accept what they're handed by the regime. When they're handed a little too much, for example, when a driver from the Russian nomenklatura crashes into somebody and going the wrong way on a highway and kills them, then some protests are possible. But it has to cut pretty close to the bone.
So you don't think we've reached a point of the revolution of rising expectations and relative deprivation, to bring the political science terminology in there?
I think that there's a lot of smoldering discontent, and that the situation could change, but it won't change in an evolutionary way. I think that events could conspire, for example, a real deterioration in the economy, to motivate people to protest the corruption that they see all around them on a mass scale. But for the moment, Russian society appears to be too exhausted for that.
Well, this is the last question I wanted to address here is you've spoken about the moral crisis in Russian society, and could you, for our listeners, kind of talk a little bit about what you mean by that? It was an interesting thing that came up when we were speaking the other day.
Well, it's an ongoing moral crisis. It's the state of the mentality of the country at the present time, because it's an inheritance from the Soviet era. The fact that in Russia, the individual human being is not valued, and his life is not valued. His life is expendable, and he's expendable in the pursuit of various political goals. This is the deeper meaning of these protests over the blue lights, because for government bureaucrats, the lives of the people who get in the way of their limousines are just not that important, and they never have been. This is an old problem. So until Russia, and this is actually a theme I touch on in my new book, is a society in which individuals are valued, it's really not going to make progress, either politically or in the true sense economically. Yeah, you could say they've made progress under Putin economically, and indeed the country is richer. But that's been on the strength of record high prices for commodities. I mean, it's not the kind of achievement that one could really be proud of or that indicates something fundamental about the economic potential of the society.
That was David Satter, longtime Russia watcher, author of the book Darkness at Dawn, The Rise of the Russian Criminal State, and the forthcoming, it was a long time ago, and it didn't happen anyway, Russia in the Communist Past. That was the first edition of the Power Vertical podcast. I'd like to remind you that you can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org or follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/PowerVertical. And now I leave you with the music of Noise MC.